My Life in Gum. The first quarter. I remember my mother standing in the kitchen, chatting on the yellow telephone with a long and twisting cord. She would twirl her short brown hair with her index finger as she chewed a piece of gum. She'd use her tongue to fold the gum in half, trapping a small air bubble, then chomp down, producing a sharp snap as the bubble was popped. When I heard that noise, I knew that there was a package of dentine somewhere in the house. Our household in the 1960s did not overflow with snacks or candy. Later, when my mother became a grandmother, she would stuff the huge freezer in the mudroom with popsicles and ice cream, but growing up there was not much junk food. There were no soft drinks or chips, and if I asked for a snack, my mother would suggest a piece of toast with honey. She didn't bake, and the waft of freshly baked cookies never greeted us home from school. There were few packaged cookies, no rituals of unscrewing Oreos and scraping off the sugary inside. It wasn't until I was a teenager that I realized that cookies and milk were a popular combo. But there was dentine gum. Dentine was the official chewing gum of our household, and along with Smith Brothers Wild Cherry Cough Drops were the rare permitted impulse purchases in the checkout line. The Smith Brothers package featured two bearded men who looked like they could be Abe Lincoln's friends. The cough drops were nothing more than hard candy, entirely similar to lifesavers, but if you coughed discreetly or rubbed your throat, my mother might pop them in the cart. Similarly, the health claim of dentine, which is derived from dental hygiene, may also have been its selling point. There it was, right on the package. Help keep teeth white, breath fresh. Who wouldn't want to provide a public service by keeping their breath fresh? I think my mother thought the other brands, particularly Wrigley's Juicy Fruit, were day class A sugar delivery vehicles with no redeeming value. Dentine had a distinctive red package with the six smaller but chubbier pieces of gum lined up side by side. The diminutive size of the pieces was another selling point, since they allowed for more discreet chewing compared to the larger sticks of Wrigley's gum. My brothers may have enjoyed blowing bubbles with bazooka gum, but this was a male-dominated activity. Based on my mother's example, the only gum suitable for a sophisticated woman was dentine, and only if chewed very discreetly. I rarely saw my father chew gum, except for the fitful occasions when he tried to quit smoking. But if he did chew gum, it was blackjack. This puzzled me, since blackjack was not sold in our grocery store, and my mother didn't buy it for him. All became clear in a driving trip through Wisconsin that took us directly through downtown Milwaukee. I remember looking out and seeing black folks walking the sidewalks and sitting on stoops. This was a definite novelty for me, since our affluent suburb was the epitome of white homogeneity. On the other hand, my father went all the way into downtown Chicago for work as a salesman for a financial printing company. His clients were mostly corporate lawyers, but his workplace also included the men who operated the printing presses. He was the only one in our family who had experienced heterogeneity firsthand. As we glided through Milwaukee sealed in our car, he looked out the window and announced with great authority, "Black men like to wear hats on Sunday. They also like to chew blackjack gum." Even as a 10-year-old, I realized that this was a sweeping generalization, so I spent some time puzzling through these remarks. For example, regardless of the weather, my father always wore a brimmed felt hat with a grosgrain ribbon to work, but he would never wear a hat on the weekend. Perhaps this was the basis of his odd comment. Maybe his blackjack comment was also based on his work environment. My father always made friends with everyone and was probably one of the few salesmen who went down to the clanging and sweaty printing presses to see how his jobs were coming. If he noticed blackjack gum in the break room, he probably would have rushed out to buy a few packs so that he could offer some to his coworkers. I could picture him standing in the elevator with the crew chief and extending a pack of the licorice-flavored blackjack. "Hey, how's it going down there? Is it busy? Want a piece of gum?" We used to get Christmas cards from his co-workers, and they were instantly recognizable. Cards from local friends came on heavy cardstock with a picture of immaculately dressed families sitting on well-tended lawns. The most pretentious cards announced that the family had taken some exotic vacation, perhaps with a picture of kids decked out in ski outfits standing in the shadow of the Matterhorn in the Swiss Alps. The Christmas cards from his co-workers, I remember Scotty and Jerry Gerard, always came on flimsy paper showing a Christmas scene embedded with sparkly sprinkles that came off in your hand when you opened them. The second quarter. I stopped living full-time at home when I went to boarding school at age 14. I would sign out of the dorm and walk downtown to get a pack of Dentine. One day I was shocked and outraged to discover that Dentine was no longer a nickel. Instead of having 6 pieces of gum, now there were only 5. Or you could buy a value pack of 15 pieces, but it didn't take a genius to figure out that you were getting gypped. This was my vivid and painful introduction to inflation. I bought up as many of the nickel packages that I could find and then vowed I would never chew Dentine again. Their price increase was inexcusable for a loyal customer. My revenge lasted only about a week until I resigned myself to the inevitability of inflation. I carried my Dentine habit with me as a necessary study aid throughout my academic life until age 29 when I finally finished my medical training. During medical school, I loved reading textbooks, particularly the anatomy and pathology texts that became the focus of my career. I would go to the sunny library at Northwestern University and stake out a large desk and line up the texts, the yellow highlighter, and gum. First, I would open the book and run my hands along the glossy pages. I would then open the highlighter and take an appreciative whiff, and finally, I would pop a piece of Dentine into my mouth. Mentally, I could read a textbook all day, but I needed a tiny bit of physical stimulation to keep from getting jittery. Chewing gum was just enough to strike the right balance. As I chewed one piece after another, a mound of used gum would pile up on the desk. When I had gone through the entire value pack of Dentine, I knew that it was time to pack up and go home. Once I finished medical school and stopped reading textbooks, the only venue I found for chewing gum was long car rides. The strategy was the same. The gum served as the minimal physical activity necessary to keep me focused on the road. Although I had managed to weather the disappointment of inflation, it was hard to bear the next blow. Dentine stopped making the classic cinnamon flavor. Instead, they transitioned to various sugar-coated flavors packaged in blister packs. When Coca-Cola retired Classic Coke, there was a national uproar, but Dentine managed to make the transition without a peep. Even after Dentine retired its classic, I could occasionally find some at out-of-the-way gas stations, and I would buy them out. But when that tenuous supply petered out, I stopped chewing gum entirely. The legacy of my mother came to a sorry end. The third quarter. During the next decades, I would occasionally check to see if classic Dentine had staged a comeback, but no luck. Furthermore, Dentine nixed their simple slogan of helps keep teeth white, breath fresh, to prey on the insecurities of dating. Packages advised, practice safe breath. Different flavors were also sold in a car cup, with the sugar-coated pieces of gum rattling inside like pills in a prescription bottle. On the top it said, safe breath is date breath. The blister pack came with 2 sleeves of gum, 8 pieces in each, with the label split to fit your lifestyle. The idea was that when you split the pack, one half would fit discreetly in a pocket, like an emergency pack of condoms. One split said, for pre-party. The other half was supposed to be held in reserve if you got lucky, labeled for post-party. Ads also played on the similarity to condoms. In one, a nervous young man buys his Dentine at a drugstore, while the cashier snickers and winks at him knowingly. The packages also said, keeps breath fresher for 40 minutes after chewing. This claim is illustrated with a little stopwatch. This raises interesting questions about the research Dentine did to validate this claim. I could imagine a focus group of couples sniffing each other's breath as the seconds tick by. Honey, I think it's about time for another stick of gum, one woman might say with a dispirited sniff, as she realizes her partner needs reinforcement after a scant 20 minutes. Perhaps the Dentine legal counsel demanded a more objective test, and the crack engineering team devised an aroma meter equipped with blinking red lights and an alarm if the odor fell below an arbitrary freshness level. However, note that Dentine only claims to make your breath fresher. If you started at a noxious level, perhaps after an extended nap, you could still meet Dentine's goal of being fresher while remaining pretty skanky. For example, even if you could freshen up the pungency of dog shit, it will still smell like shit. The Dentine website includes some truly bizarre YouTube videos. One animated video is simply called Banana Hammock and features scantily clad male and female avatars sitting in a sauna. The woman asks the man why he isn't sweating profusely. He claims that he always carries a split-to-fit pack of Dentine Ice with him. The woman then says, "How is this possible, since you are wearing a banana hammock?" The video then cuts to a tight close-up of the man's crotch. It is impossible to imagine that this teeny banana hammock could accommodate one stick of gum, much less the eight in a split-to-fit pack. The man then responds, "Yes, my split-to-fit pack fits almost anywhere, like in my banana hammock." The two then trade additional jargon, with the man contending that his pack of gum would fit into a plump snuggler, a sausage sling, a dong sarong, and then, oddly enough, the man says that the split-to-fit pack would not fit in a manberry pudding pack. Clearly, not my mother's Dentine anymore. Now, as part of a reading assignment from our writing class, I read a parody of Ken Burns' documentaries, where the author substitutes the history of gum for topics such as the Civil War or baseball. The parody opens with a hilarious, over-the-top imitation of Burns' signature reverential style. It started as an idle pursuit, a way to pass the time, to occupy the slackened jaw of street urchin and steel magnate alike. Even in its infancy, when America wakened to its unfurling power like a slumbering giant whose nap had been cut short by the ambulance cry of its own withered soul, when gnashing, nattering demons fought for the very plinth of this great land, when the corn was as high as an elephant's eye, even then it served as a salve to the spirit, a lulling reminder that there would still be tomorrow, even if tomorrow never came. The parody goes on to interview such Burns regulars as the historian Shelby Foote, who comments that gum's enduring flavor is a metaphor for all that is regenerative in American life. As irreverent as this parody is, gum could actually be a suitable subject for Ken Burns. Imagine the fascination of tracing the cultural significance of chewing as a pastime or social courtesy, focusing on gum, betel nuts, tobacco, coca leaves, or whatever else humans have used to address their oral fixation. The documentary could find archaeologic evidence of gum wads from ancient days, or carbon date the gum despoiling the streets of Ephesus or affixed to Jesus' sandals. Interviews could include natives of Peru, India, Southeast Asia, and baseball players, all of them dedicated gum chewers. This could take up to 20 episodes. If Ken Burns wanted something quick and simple, I'd be glad to give him my life in gum.